You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi there, welcome to the show. It's Friday, August the 7th, and a scorcher here in the United Kingdom. And albeit Ireland and France fly the flag really well, here in Britain, we're without a marquee race this weekend, which means we're getting typically restless. We're concerned about prize money for British Champions Day falling by 40%. I'll be talking to CEO Rod Street in a few moments' time. We continue to be exercised, and rightly, about how we're looking after our workforce. James Savage, head man to Sir Michael Stout, will be along later. And we're still working out how we might draw people into this great sport, even in these troubled times. And Chris Grant, the man helping to create a new survey to inform British Racing's new community outreach programme, will join me at the end of the show. But first, the embers of the debate surrounding punishment for race riding and interference, which we've discussed at length on this programme, have been reignited by a lengthy piece in today's Racing Post by the BHA Chief Regulatory Officer, Brant Dunshea, who's most concerned by the existing appeals process and the fact that it keeps overturning verdicts that have been meted out initially by BHA race day stewards. Now, joining me to discuss this is Cornelius Lycett. Cornelius, does the appeals process need a radical overhaul?
I suppose, in a way, it's inevitable, isn't it, that BHA would want to look at this relatively new process simply because it needs a result, really. It needs some points on the board. It strikes me that practically every time you see an appeal or you hear an appeal taking place, it ends up being successful. In fact, the news that William Buick lost an appeal from Goodwood, funnily enough, when the jockey who was called as a witness actually gave very favourable evidence as far as William was concerned, but he lost his appeal against a two-day ban. That's actually quite an eye-catching story around the place, because on the whole, whether it's been riding offences, Rab Havlin in particular at Yarmouth, but other things as well, the flag-waving incident at Sandown, it seems BHA is coming off badly on many occasions. If I'm brutally honest, I sat through the Sandown flag-waving inquiry that lasted a very long time. Was it early this year or late last year? I didn't think that it wasn't exactly Kavanagh QC or Rumpole of the Bailey from BHA, if one's strictly honest. And on many occasions, they're up against somebody who's much more akin to Mr. Kavanagh or Mr. Rumpole, Rory McNeice, who is a very, very deft, a very, very good advocate on these occasions. And I don't know, I wouldn't want to pick out anyone and say anything particularly rude, but it did strike me they could probably just pull their socks up a little bit on the presentation front in those inquiries. Their advocates aren't necessarily as impressive against an advocate who is particularly impressive, who seems to often represent the riders.
How impressed were you with Brant Dunshea's lengthy piece in today's Racing Post, where he tried to explain the processes?
Well, I think the very fact it's happened is striking. I suppose in the real world, outside the racing bubble, if a government minister, for example, wants to make a particular point on whatever his brief is, then he might well go to the Daily Mirror or the Daily Telegraph or whatever and write a column, and then that becomes news. Well, Brant Dunshea has done this. He's explained it pretty clearly. A couple of things that, there was one. There's a large element of diplomacy with Brant. You know, the standard of race riding in this country, exceptional, he says early on. The standard officiating in Britain, something of which to be proud. Interestingly, in the response, the Professional Jockeys Association say there's a small number of officials whose decisions are appealed more often than others.
Well, it's a debate that is not going to go away in a hurry, nor will the debate surrounding prize money for the remainder of 2020. It was announced yesterday that British Champions Day would have its prize money reduced by 40%. And to try and find out exactly how those mechanics work this year, I've been speaking to its chief executive, Rod Street.
But the principles are the same that apply to any race courses. You have various income streams which enable you to plan for your prize money, your income from your race day tickets, your on-site revenue such as your betting, your hospitality, any commercial partnerships you've got. And with them pretty much eradicated this year, you have to look at your remaining income. In our case, we're extremely fortunate to have a very committed partner in KIPCO. We know that we'll still get some betting revenues in, although there's obviously still some uncertainty about how that lands come the day. And then there's your entry fees for the race. And of course, that's affected by the race meeting and the early closing coming later than it normally would have. And the fact that, you know, that as soon as you shift your prize money down, your entry income obviously reduced alongside that. So you have to just go through your P&L and look at what is deliverable, in the knowledge that, you know, you are putting it on the line. Once you publish those values, you're committed to those values, and then you need everything to go your way.
You still got £2.5 million over the six races. So how is that made up, and who is providing that money this year?
It's a mixture of, without going into the confidentiality of our sponsorship arrangements, but it's a mixture of the income we receive from KIPCO as a sponsor, who of course sponsor the whole series and sponsor a set of rights associated with that leading up to Champions Day, and of course the KIPCO Guinness Festival at the beginning of the year. So their deal is very, very wide ranging. It's entry fee income. There is some levy funding for it. And it's an executive contribution, so it's a mixture of all of those things that enables you to get to that number that you do.
What feedback have you had from industry professionals as regards how successful or otherwise this day might be given the reduced prize money?
I think we've had very encouraging feedback internally. We obviously discussed it with the BHA before we did it, and who have a really good insight on the race planning and our hosting partner on the day, Ascot. And what we've put up, particularly if you look at the top two group ones on the day, the Champion Stakes and the QE2, they're both more valuable than this year's Derby, which is not to demean the value of this year's Derby, because we are all in a very, very challenging situation. But I think that message that we're doing our best and being as competitive as we can be should help us to attract as many of the runners as we can. It's not without challenge. We're all aware that there are some bigger pots available overseas, just over the channel and then further afield. So the connections of the top horses do have choice. But I think that there is still a tremendous value in winning British Group 1 races. And we know that the impact that can have on stallion and broodmare careers. And so we think in putting together the best prize money we can on the day, with the quality of the races that we're holding, that we'll stand up.
Rod, there was a suggestion yesterday on Twitter from my former Channel 4 colleague, Jim McGrath, that you'd been looking to do this already to cut prize money before COVID-19 came along. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I think my reaction was, my reaction was public. And he, I don't know where he got that from. He was just simply wrong. That's not correct. Our prize money this year and our decision is utterly driven by the impact of COVID-19. So I don't know why he said that, but it's just not true. If we get back to 2021 and let's say that we're starting to talk about COVID in a retrospective way as something that happened as opposed to something that's still happening, I think that would be absolutely the intention, that we go back to putting on the richest day of racing in the UK, which it still is this year, but at the levels it's formerly been at. That's in all of our long-term business forecast. To do that, we need crowds back, we need hospitality back, we need some of our commercial partners connected to the day, but that's absolutely the intention and something that our partner KIPCO would expect us to do as part of our relationship.
Rod Street there. Cornelius, I think Rod was justifiably a bit stung by the use of the word slashed in the Racing Post headline yesterday. And in the wider context, how do you think the Champions Day prize money stacks up?
You used the word reduced in your introduction to Rod there. Slashed is a word that's, you know, government departments slash education spending, don't they? So I think they were probably stung by that as a whole. It would have been extraordinary if the prize money had not had to take a bit of a hit. It has had to take a bit of a hit, but still, they're good pots with big prize money, aren't they? And I think certainly the way the summer has the narrative of the summer has worked out through Royal Ascot, the Epsom, through Goodwood, on towards York and beyond. We can, if the whole thing keeps up and the quality keeps going and the stories keep on going, we can look forward to a British Champions Day in the middle of October, which has got lots of stuff, including, you know, very respectable, if not rather better than that, prize money.
Of course, we are used to crowning not only equine champions on Champions Day, but also in recent years, human champions. Yeah. Jockey's Championship this year will be a bit different. Rod confirming after the interview that would run on until the end of the turf season this year, whenever that might be. That could be sort of mid to end November, I suppose.
Absolutely. After the November handicap, which was the traditional end. I think this is going to be a very exciting race as well. And, you know, if you look at that race at the moment, Oisin Murphy, the reigning champion, leads, but by less than 10, as we sit here now, from Tom Marquand, who's just in front of William Buick, who's the fascinating contender, then Ben Curtis, and Holly Doyle's not out of it. So if she came up and started racing with her partner, Tom Marquand, that would be quite something. But Buick's the fascinating one, because this year works for William Buick, because it's only one meeting, so a jockey who goes north, south, east and west isn't going to be able to grab some huge advantage at any point. And my understanding is that friends of Buick are saying that he is really up for it. Really, really up for it. And I think, I was talking about this to someone the other day, I think Ian Balding, father of Andrew and Claire, when he was training and William Buick was an apprentice there, I think he had, to a small stake at big odds, a bet that William Buick will one day be champion jockey. So I imagine Ian Balding will be watching with, and the Balding family will be watching with considerable interest.
This weekend would normally be a weekend where we would celebrate jockeys, national and international, because it would normally be Shergar Cup Day on Saturday. Yeah. Are you missing the Shergar Cup, Cornelius?
I've only ever been once, and that was the first one ever. Quiz question for you, Nick. Can you remember where the first ever Shergar Cup was?
Yeah, it was at Goodwood, and they tried to frame it as a Ryder Cup styley event, and David Platt's horse, Handsome Ridge, won the grandly named Shergar Cup Classic.
I knew that asking you a quiz question at whatever time of day was always going to be troublesome. So I thought I might have got you there, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I remember going to that one. I must confess, I haven't been since because it's sometimes been holiday time. For me, but no Shergar Cup this year for obvious reasons. And if you actually look at the weekend, we do really miss the Shergar Cup. They're still racing at Ascot, Haydock, Newmarket, Uttoxeter, Cork, Kilbeggan tomorrow, but it is pretty standard Saturday stuff in Britain and Ireland on Sunday. Salisbury, Thirsk, Windsor, the Curragh and Downpatrick. Well, the Curragh has got the Keeneland Phoenix Stakes at 3 o'clock. And interestingly, Aidan O'Brien with runners, but not the some of the really touted horses for that. But I think the race to really savour for the weekend is at Deauville, 2:15 Sunday afternoon, the Prix Maurice de Geest. And a potential lots of decent animals taking part. But Earthlight versus Golden Horde, round three, a possibility. There was a neck and 2.5 lengths between them in the pre-Morney last summer. Then there was a neck between them in the Middle Park. Earthlight coming out on top on both occasions. But clearly, Golden Horde has moved forward this year. Earthlight returned in interesting, good style the other day. So that could be a real sort of a real showdown to savour at Deauville on Sunday.
And racing on Sunday is just one of the topics that I covered this morning in a conversation I had with James Savage, the head lad to Sir Michael Stout. And I began by asking James how his team had been finding it since the new regulations were imposed after the resumption of racing.
It's been challenging. I mean, we were delighted to get racing going at the start, and it was all very different. Adapting to the rules and regulations, I think we took on quite quickly, but it has been a bit challenging. I think one of the things that's been greatly appreciated now is that some of the tracks are opening up to able to go overnight, which is making, you know, some of them trips were becoming very long and long days for the staff. So some tracks opening up now overnight is making it a lot easier. And also with tracks putting on some refreshments and food, is some tracks is making it better for us as well. It's different. It's very different.
I know that you're very sensitive to the difficulty faced by racecourses, but are there any things now you think they could do to make your lives better, easier, more comfortable?
It's hard with the... with the rules in place and the protocols we have to follow. I mean, being able to get washed and showered and changed is one of the main things that's quite, you know, concerning at the moment. That is a small problem. Even if the racecourses can't offer canteens, some refreshments, tea, coffee, etc., would be very welcome. It's the hygiene thing that is concerning some of us, being able to shower and wash and clean.
And I'm sure you're understanding of that, but the crucial thing is that you're getting a conversation, a level of engagement with all the other stakeholders in the sport, so you know exactly where you stand. Are you happy that you are getting that engagement?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're all, you know, it's the same for all of us. I know it's frustrating for the jockeys and the... not being able to use their facilities. It's frustrating for the owners, it's frustrating for the trainers. So, you know, we're all just having to adapt. I think we're all being treated the same. It's just about, you know, if we can move forward with some areas in the next few months, it'd be great. Make it easier and more enjoyable.
James, obviously there's been a lot in the news, and we've discussed it on this podcast a lot recently about Sunday racing, and stable staff really are the group we have to factor in most, because this is the group that's going to be most inconvenienced by Sunday racing. What's your view on more and or better racing on Sundays?
I think that you know, when you see a good quality card on a Sunday that's going to be televised, it can only be a good thing, and you know, I enjoy it. My worry is that if this quality racing on a Sunday becomes even more popular, and certain race courses try and move their listed race or their heritage handicap to that Sunday to, you know, to get more crowds and to get some coverage from channels, TV channels, etc., suddenly becomes Sunday's going to become even more popular, and that would put a massive strain on racing staff, because we have one and two Sundays off, so you're half staff as it is. And if you go racing on your weekend off, which most lads, if the horses run, do, then that means they have to take a day off during the week. So it has a knock-on effect. It's going to have a knock-on effect to the whole week, not just the Sunday. That would be my concern. I'm all for good racing on a Sunday, but as long as Sunday doesn't become a Saturday, that's my worry.
James, thank you very much. Now, a survey has this week been launched to create a source of information and inspiration for people in the racing industry and to showcase the scale and value of racing's contribution to wider society. What's not to like? Well, the man behind the survey is Chris Grant, and he's been explaining a little more.
Well, I helped to chair a forum last November in Newmarket where people came from around the world, six countries, to compare notes on what they're doing in community engagement and education. It was so impressive, and there was a big group from the UK talking about what they're doing, and we just felt, wouldn't it be a great idea to capture so that we can tell everyone about the value that the industry's adding in communities?
And as far as racing's reach into communities goes at the moment. How do you rate it?
Well, I've worked across different sports. I used to run a UK-wide Olympic and Paralympic legacy charity called Sported, which is a membership organisation, 3,000 groups, 90-odd sports and activities, all working in their communities. I didn't know much about racing and the thoroughbred industry and what it was doing before last November. I've been hugely impressed at the breadth and the depth of the activity that's going on. But the true answer to your question, Nick, is that we don't know really yet. And that's why we wanted to do this survey. We wanted to really get a better sense of the activity that's going on. We know there's lots of it. We know there's good stuff. But I think we're all going to get pleasantly surprised when we see the results of the survey in the autumn.
British racing over the last couple of years has engaged in a necessary, and many would say overdue, diversity drive, and also through Racing to School, which I know is a partner of this initiative, to try and get many younger people racing sooner. How important do you think this initiative, this survey, is in trying to achieve both those objectives?
Oh, I think it could help a lot. We have a mantra in this kind of area that when you're looking at sport for social change, which is that you need to be able to prove what you're doing and improve what you're doing. And I think, you know, for me, just being able to see the extent of the activity going on, but also to start forming judgments based on what we're picking up from the survey about the numbers of young people, for example, being helped, and also where those young people are. Obviously, there's a focus around the hubs of the industry, but for example, one of the member organisations of the charity I led, Sported, was the Ebony Horse Club in Brixton. And I'm aware that there are lots of initiatives going on in urban areas and areas you wouldn't necessarily associate with the industry where young people are also being helped. And by mapping them, what we're hoping we can do is not only bring them more support, but inspire others to take on and start initiatives a bit like them. So copying or plagiarism or magpie style behaviour is good in this world in that we want people to learn about stuff so they can copy it and do more of it.
And it's key to stress that this initiative is part of a global approach, essentially, isn't it?
Yes, there's a broader group. Those six nations who came together in November in Newmarket pledged that they were going to support each other, learn from each other, share what they're already doing and develop new activity. And that's now been mirrored in the UK. So leaders across various parts of the industry in the last couple of weeks have endorsed and supported what's happening here. This particular survey is being coordinated by Racing Together in the UK, along with the Racing Foundation and Godolphin. And when the results are published, Nick, in the autumn, they'll be available to everyone through the Racing Together website and other routes. Everyone who wants to be able to promote what the industry is doing, whether that's locally or nationally, will be able to use the outcomes of this survey to demonstrate to others, particularly outside the industry, the value that the industry has in communities.
Chris, I know you haven't really got much on today. What are you up to after talking to me?
Well, I'm on a summit call with the chief execs of England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales, the sports councils, plus UK Sport, to talk about the joined up response to some of the recent events with Black Lives Matter and around racial inequalities. And one of my dreams, Nick, is that across all sports in the next maybe 15 years, we'll see our representative teams looking like and sounding like the whole of the UK population. And, you know, I watched Khadija Mella, the young woman from the aforementioned Ebony Horse Club last year, winning the Magnolia Cup. And for me, the equestrian events should be part of that too. I know that young people anywhere can fall in love with horses and equestrian sports. And I think the same can apply for sailing and rowing and all those other sports that we're very good at. So I've got a meeting with those chief execs to talk about how we can bring the benefits of sport to the whole population. Really looking forward to it. Thank you, Nick. Can I just say that people can get to the survey? We're really encouraging people to complete it. Even if you're not sure whether what you're doing counts as community engagement or education, go to racingtogether.co.uk, open the survey link, which is on the front page, and have a look. Because even just by looking at it, you might be inspired, you might learn something, but hopefully you'll be able to add to it what you've been doing, and that will appear then in the directory in the autumn. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Chris. Well, all that remains is for Cornelius to send you all whistling into this warm weekend on a winner. Cornelius.
You're looking for some red hot tips. Haha. I thought, how's everyone else going at the moment, Nick? Everyone's been tipping winners left, right, and centre, haven't they? Especially Lydia. Well, she's brilliant.
Lydia's very consistent. Rishi is obviously still dining out on Khalifa, sat second in the derby. Jane Mangan.
Well, 5 weeks now, goodness.
Yeah, Jane Mangan went from zero to hero. She got that Galway Plate Sussex Stakes double on the same day. That'll take a bit of beating.
Dave Yates,
he's been pretty steady away, to be honest, pretty consistent. Of course, he won the Naps table last month, didn't he? And donated his winnings to Racing Welfare, though I know he doesn't like me to talk about his charity work. So yeah, not too bad.
He'll be really upset you mentioned that. Really upset.
Yeah.
And Lee Motter said he's been in good form as well. Oh, so I'm the one.
Lee's probably actually top of the lot. Yeah. I've forgotten.
So I'm as they say in the form book, TO'd, I think. I thought that I might go to Ascot tomorrow at 4:45. There's a horse there called Princess Power, trained by Nigel Tinkler. And she had a good run a couple of years ago and, inevitably went up the handicap. But she looks decently handicapped at the moment. She ran well last time out at Sandown, finishing third, this Princess Power. She's ridden by Danny Redmond, jockey who became a bit of an internet hit the other day when helping a swan who'd got his head. Did you see that story? He got his this swan got
He rescued a swan from a river at Pontefract.
Yeah, absolutely. And the actual it's well worth looking at on the internet, because not only does he rescue the swan, which is great, but he gives a running commentary while he's doing it. It's absolutely brilliant. So Danny Redmond is riding this horse, Princess Power, in the 4:45. At Ascot tomorrow. Nigel Tinkler, I think he's well on his way to having another pretty good season. Last couple have been pretty good for him. Four winners in the last couple of weeks, including Acklam Express at Goodwood. So Princess Power on what? He's also actually got a horse called See the Light running 10 minutes later at Haydock, who's likely to go well too. So could be a big 10 minutes for Nigel Tinkler, but it's Princess Power and Danny Redmond, the Swan Man, who I hope to see sailing out in front.
Cornelius, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back again to do it on Monday. Don't forget that if you do enjoy this podcast, please first tell your friends and then rate us, review us and subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, Google or iTunes. Have a wonderful, warm weekend from all of us. Bye-bye for now. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.